It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
What it is, welcome to the Wise Men. And we're just getting wiser. Joining us today is Kevin, a.k.a. A-Rai. Two-time NWA World Heavyweight Champion and victor in 74, Trevor Murdoch. Any angle, as long as it's his angle, Aaron Idol, and of course, the one and only EC3. So we got a full squad and special guest today.
It's good to be a wise man.
Yes.
Yes, sir.
And Mike Bennett will be in the house.
We are growing in number and wisdom.
And jitters, sorry.
I took a pre-workout thinking I was going to get a quick workout in before the show today.
And now you have the jitters.
I got the jitters,
and we're not working out. You know, I share that sometimes. I have a coffee.
Yeah.
Two coffees maybe. Get ready for the gym. Then something happens.
Coffee?
Yes.
Yeah, was that coffee?
Yeah. Was that the North accent?
I caught a little bit of coffee.
Yeah, I find that hilarious that Trevor is talking about an accent.
Right. Yes, the hick, the redneck.
And then something interrupts the workout, and I'm in a chair,
something?
And I got a pre-workout.
I'm going to go out on a limb here and say it's a phone call.
Yeah, right.
From somebody who claims to love you more than everybody else.
I just had a pre-workout. Yeah. I can't.
I don't have 7 minutes to talk about wall treatments, darling.
Right.
Well, let me ask you guys this, okay, because we've all been there. If this happens, do you take another scoop of pre-workout, or if your workout, you don't make your workout initially, do you take another scoop later in the day?
Absolutely, right?
Okay.
Well, depending on how long it takes for the phone call. I mean, the phone call goes 4 hours. I need another pre-workout.
Well, to be honest with me, the rage from the phone call fuels me for my workout. So I don't have to actually take another pre-workout.
If you knew you got the phone call before the pre-workout, you wouldn't need the pre-workout.
I wouldn't need the pre-workout, but I'm stupid because every day I think it's not going to happen.
That's what
makes it insanity.
That's right.
She's not going to call.
The phone call will not happen today, so I need the pre-workout. Yeah. Damn it.
You would think 10 years in, they would figure out the big likes to work out, like, alone.
I'm just trying to get you motivated.
No, it's not even that.
I'm just trying to get you motivated to go to the gym. I just had the pre-workout.
It's always, how was your morning? Mine's fine. Well, let me tell you about mine. Oh, geez. Here we go. And then he was like this, and you understand the way that I feel? And I'm like,
You just got to say yes. Just say yes.
Oh,
just
it doesn't matter. What do you mean, just yes? I mean, that's very, like, you're very short with me today. Is there a reason? I want to go work out. How very selfish of you. I already took the pre-workout. I mean, eat a human's face off.
This is nothing
if
personal.
I don't do this now,
it's a timing issue.
Do it now.
That's right.
Yeah.
Here's a couple things about pre-workout. So, like, I got kicked out of the conversation because, you know, I'm in hurricane weather over here.
Oh, Jesus. How are you, man?
Yeah, we need a. How is it down there?
Good. I'm alive. Yeah, wet, but it's not too bad. So
any flooding?
Everybody but Fox News, I'd like to say congratulations on creating mass hysteria around me.
Yes.
Fox News, of course, not. And there's a truth. But every other news organization causing mass chaos. I have all my guns loaded. My door is not locked. I'm welcoming anybody to come in at any time. I'm shirtless. I'm taking a bath, but we're talking pre-workout. The thing about pre-workout is, first off, timing is of the essence, so you never want to take it until you are about to walk into a gym. That's always been my theory. Secondly, pre-workouts today, they range from like 300 to 400 milligrams of caffeine. Too much. It's a gimmick. Get yourself a non-stim because caffeine over 125 milligrams per serving doesn't have you vasodilate. So the whole point of the pre-workout and the lost. So you get a non-stim, you get a cup of coffee. Third, I remember Idol vividly stopping at a 7-Eleven for some pre-workout on the way to Rob's one day, but then something really weird in the bathroom happened, and I just, you know, that popped in my mind
because
pre-workout. Yep. Yeah. All right. I'm back.
All right.
Now, I have a question.
No, we're not going to talk about that.
Yeah, don't talk about that. I have a question, EC3. Like, is there... Why is it that when there's a big hurricane or something, that the news has got to send a guy out there all by himself, getting his ass kicked, telling everybody they need to leave. And he's standing out there getting beat up by the wind and the rain and the trees. And
I guess it's the fascination of being a martyr, perhaps. I just feel sorry
for that poor like everybody's at the Marriott all dry and watching the news. And he's like, I got to go out in the middle of this to prove to everybody this is happening.
You know, and it's
may I interrupt?
You always do.
Okay. Here's I saw that guy. I was watching him live. And look, we all kind of are smart to, you know, what's a work. And by work, I mean, like, what is fake on TV. I am going to say he went out on a limb and said, you know what? I need to go, like, get the most views on YouTube and everything else. I will get more popular as a weatherman, whatever, you know, in his field. And he has completely used this to get himself over. And I'm going to say even the parts when he was, like, hanging on to the sign, and he's like, oh, I'm slipping. No, he's exaggerating. My opinion, I'll shut up now.
No, you know
it's
what?
It's all the work.
Who was it that got in big trouble for that? Was that Cooper Anderson who, like, kneeled down in the water to just make it look like he was flooding? His argument was it was actually that deep over there, but they wouldn't let him stand there for his safety. So to give you perspective, he got on his knees to show you how deep the water. Like, I agree. The one thing is, like, typically it was very stereotypical. You'd never catch a brother doing that. We just don't do that. You know what I'm saying? We go the other way. There's a movie called Nope. If you ever want to know how black people handle scary situations, we say nope and walk the other way. Having said that, it's a different world now. I have noticed a few brothers and sisters, again, they usually tend to be a little closer to the cameraman with just a slight drizzle or the day after. So we're winning on that one. You other guys, though, these guys, you know, some of it's just sitting in the office all day talking about weather. I think it's like, we got to get out there. You know, his dream was to chase tornadoes, you know, and be outside of volcanoes and be there to witness his Mother Nature's worst and tell us about it. Now all they get to do is like, well, you can't do any of that. But what you can do is you can stand in a foot of water with a wind machine on and make it sound like you're standing in the middle of a hurricane. How about that? What do you say?
I love it when they say they've told everybody to leave the area, but I'm going to stay here and give you guys the view.
And I'll be here for the next 5 days.
Because it's
telling everybody to leave the area.
Here's the cool part. The satellite does the job. Satellite does the job.
Thank you.
You know?
Thank you. Set up an iPhone and talk about it in the background. You know what I mean?
Hey, I'd be doing it all from green screen. You know, one of the biggest imprints of my life when I was a small child, the very few times I got to go to my grandparents' house, my grandmother would watch Mutual of Omaha's Wild Kingdom on reruns. And was it Marlon Perkins, I think his name was? He was always in studio. And joining us live is poor Jack, who will attempt to take down the lion with his bare hands. And then he would, and let's go to Jack. I would be that guy. I am fine being in studio, throwing it to Aaron, who's live outside the volcano. Aaron, how's it going? It's hot. My hair is melting. Back to you. So there, it has its place.
Hell no. No.
No.
Just no.
And you'd never go on ghost adventures, right? Like, you.
No, why would I go on a ghost adventure?
I so want to do that. No, I want to do that.
See? I do not. There's no.
I want to do that, but I want to do it with friends.
I do not want to sit in the house in the dark with a bunch of dudes going, did you hear that? I feel like it's just a waste of time. Now, if you throw a campfire in there and some fishing poles or something, or, you know, some hunting.
That's outside the house. Yeah, no, that's outside the house.
Like, ghosts are afraid of the woods? Like, this makes no sense. Why would you be in a house when you can float and go anywhere?
Well, that's
if we're all going to be in New Orleans together, then maybe maybe November 10th, we do a haunted house visit. And I don't know, maybe we capture content, the 3.5 wise men in New Orleans at the haunted mansion.
I have a great haunted mansion. It's called my house.
That's a good idea, though.
It's called my house, yes.
There you go.
Yes, I have a three-story home that's haunted by a really mean woman. So I would love.
Would you stop?
Three of us to try to stay up past 10 o'clock on a school night and record it. And slowly but surely, when each one is picked off one at a time, this is a great idea. You know, we get Billy Corgan to wear the outfit from his latest video and just kind of roll around the house going, ooh, like, I'm with it. Let's do it. I'm all about content.
Well, hey, do you guys want to hear something that's actually, like, this is a true story and it involves somebody in our locker room who I will not talk about them.
Then I don't want to. You got to bury them. So we do here. This place is called the Three Shovelmen.
We don't try to, but on accident, sometimes it happens.
We bury so good, we don't even need shovels, bro.
It was Pope.
Oh, okay.
All right. So in Louisville, which is the current city I'm in, there is Waverly Sanitarium, which was a tuberculosis hospital. It is haunted. I mean,
it was full of lungers.
Lungers.
But in WWE, they said, hey, let's do a ghost adventure thing. And I think it was like CM Punk and the Pope. So there's this one hallway that's known. I mean, if you throw a ball down the hallway, it comes back. There's no like pitch in the floor or anything like that. And like there's just a lot of stuff that goes on. So Pope he's running around with his little EVP, whatever it's called. He gets to the hallway and everyone's like, oh, here we go, here we go. And they said for the first time, there was nothing. Like,
so the ghosts were racist?
It was actually the ghost of...
Racist-ass ghost.
No, it was a children's board. It was like...
kids can be racist. Just,
yeah, they did not want anything to do with Pope, apparently. Like, or they were afraid of him, or he had the power...
The ghost jumped out and said, it's a black guy. I got to hide. Hide the chains.
Yep.
Wow.
So,
racist-ass ghost.
I'm taking Pope with me.
Yeah. Here's what we do, EC3, because that's a great idea. The festivities kick off the 12th, right? So I think if everybody came in like the night of the 10th and then the 11th, I could set up an actual... haunted house in New Orleans. The downside is a good chance we could end up haunting it, seeing how it's now the murder capital of the world. But outside of that, but here's the deal. I have enough guns for everybody. So we could probably make this happen. There is there's a famous mansion that supposedly is haunted with like over 30 different ghosts or whatever. So even if the racist ones want to take the night off because I'm there, then there should be at least one or two hanging around that is more accepting.
Well, that's why they're stuck in purgatory, right?
Yeah, because they're racist. Obviously, so they have character flaws,
that's right.
Correct?
Well, they're a ghost.
Yeah,
right
everyone
now?
Always wants to say it's a tormented soul. Wouldn't that be the first one to go to heaven? Right, no, I think it's the ones that are like...
Something went wrong. They're stuck in that house.
Yeah, they're stuck in that. Because if you're a ghost, you know what I'm saying? Especially, they're always lonely guys who never got a date. Wouldn't you then go haunt a hot chick's house? Well, you know what I'm saying? Like, go haunt the local fraternity?
That's where
you know what I'm saying? Like, it makes zero sense. Yeah. They walk the halls of this home that's a fixer-upper at best.
They're stuck in their purgatory state.
It's a DIY.
Yeah, it's never like a nice home. And it's never like, hey, the ghost is always changing the TV channel. You know what I'm saying? It's always like they open and close cabinets. Not a real skill set. Right. I got to be honest with you. They turn lights on. Bro, that's not... You're not winning. I'm not scared of a guy who has to use all his powers to turn a switch.
Can you please forgive me so I can stop opening and closing these cabinets for eternity?
I would like to check it out to at least experience what the locals say and see just firsthand what could possibly be there.
I would like to barbecue and go to the gym.
Okay. You going to the gym is you walking by the mirror, flexing, going, uh-huh, and then walking out. Okay, so.
Hey, I didn't get like this by accident, man.
I feel like you did.
Do you take pre-workout for that? though.
Hell yeah, dude.
To, right? 100%.
He will get every state-of-the-art piece of equipment so he can walk in, do a couple curls, and walk out.
Yeah.
That's I have never worked out with Aaron. We've been in the gym at the same time, but we have literally never done a set of anything together. Ever.
There's just, no need.
And then occasionally he'll walk by. I'll be out front. And I'll be like, cool. That's our interaction. There's an unspoken respect there.
Absolutely.
So,
but hey, speaking of pre-workouts, do you know what's a great pre-workout? And because it's a vasodilator, and you're going to laugh, and I'm going to get bombarded by this, but Cialis will actually give you a better
for sakes.
No, I mean, this is science.
I feel like there's a commercial after this.
Yeah, yeah. And I also feel like there's a cancellation coming after this as well.
No, I'm just saying. It's like chemically, it
EC3, please step in. Did we lose EC3?
Did we lose him? Goddamn hurricane. Got him again.
Oh, he left the
It
door
must
open.
Be real then.
It's
then
real.
It must be real. If we
they
lost
got
EC3,
him. They got him.
He's one of the most dedicated men, I believe, to. Yeah, damn. All right.
Oh, it's the ghost. We'll be back with much more after this.
The Will Cain Show is now dropping 5 episodes a week. Join Fox and Friends weekend host Will Cain as he tackles the latest headlines from his unique perspective, along with thought-provoking interviews with leading figures and live calls from viewers and listeners. Listen wherever you download your favorite podcasts.
All right. Well, while we wait for EC3, I'm excited about our special guest today, and he'll be embarrassed, but I've been saying he's my favorite wrestler now for about 3 months. And plus, anyone who says Boston Strong,
there you go.
They got my respect. But Mike Bennett is with us today, and man, he's been such a welcome addition to the NWA. But if you've not followed his work, he's constantly evolving. I think we met Aaron together at Impact. Did you know him before that, Aaron?
Aaron?
We might have lost Aaron.
Did we
as
lose
well?
Another one to the storm?
Wow.
Yeah. The hurt. No.
It must be real.
Man, you son of a...
Okay, Mike, are you with us?
I'm here, man.
Hey, what's going on, man? I don't know if you heard my intro, but you know, I'm excited. My favorite wrestler's on today. So
thank you. No, I was quite flattered by your intro. I'm genuinely humbled. Thank you.
Not when you're in the ring, bruh, because that strong style is no joke.
He's a way to like, wrestle, though.
Hey, yeah. I met Mike. The first time I met Mike is I met him at Impact. And there I was like, this dude's something. He's got, and I know your ROH career is second to none. But how are you able to evolve? Because, you know, for a while you were kind of like, you always had a certain work style, but I've noticed you've just become a wrestler. I mean, and you know, Chris Jericho does a sports entertainer and the wrestler thing, but you can do sports entertain with anybody. But when the bell rings, man, I'm trying to think of anybody who's been more crisp and physical. Like where, when you look at, cause obviously you film study and you're always trying to improve yourself. Where do you get like a lot of inspiration for your style?
Honestly, it's a collection of everywhere right now. It's a collection of really old school Ring of Honor of like Nigel McGuinness and Bryan Danielson. And then it's old school Noah. It's 2000 Noah. It's 2001. It's Misawa, Kobashi. It's Kenta. It's Marufuji. It's all these guys that I'm just watching consistently over and over again. I'm trying more so to not take their style as I'm trying to just adapt it to what I already know.
You're like incorporating you said,
And it's this idea that I think wrestling at its finest is a mix of every single style all at once. Yeah. So you get a guy that does strong style, you throw him in there with a luchador and you got me glued to a television. Cause I'm like, what are these two going to do? And if you can adapt your style to anybody by just kind of like taking a little bit here, taking a little bit there, see what works, what doesn't work. And then kind of like throwing it all at the wall at once and seeing what sticks. And that's what I've done. It's not one person individually, as it's more so I look for certain guys that have a feel behind them where it's like, I felt for so long in my career, I was considered that sports entertainment guy. So when I got released by WWE, I was like, I want to be the total opposite. And the only reason I really wanted to do that was because I wanted to challenge myself. I was in a place in my life where I was like, go against everything that makes you comfortable. And pure wrestling, strong style wrestling, all this other style wrestling that I never really focused on made me uncomfortable. And so I was like, I want to get really good at this.
You know what? And that was my, when I left, or when I was asked to leave the WWE, that was exactly what I did, because I had become the sports entertainer. And I was like, I need to get back to brass tacks. I need to get back what I used to watch as a kid and be like, I want to be like that, you know. And I always liked the aggressiveness of an Ole Anderson and an Arn Anderson and a Butch Reed, guys who's backed up everything they did. Early Vader, Andre when he gave a, you know, Mr. Wonderful Paul Orndorff. And because to me, those were the guys who made, if you make the simplest thing look real and aggressive, the rest of your night is easy, you know. And that's the one thing. Your holds have just been so crisp. But here's the deal. You're part of one of the best tag teams out there. But yet, when you go to singles, there's not a drop-off. And I know that sounds weird, but a lot of guys who get that phrase, that tag team specialist, when they go in to do singles matches, you see the drop-off. And it's just, I think, I don't know if it's just because you just get so used to having that extra pair of, because it's not just having someone to wrestle when you're not in. Creatively, you know, you have another pair of eyes, you have another mind with you when you're out there. So it's like,
it's a total different mentality.
It is. Yeah.
And you get stuck in that.
And to me, I can't tell the difference, to be honest with you. And it's not like you got, like in your tag team, you guys are innovative as it gets and you've wrestled everybody.
Yeah, I think one of the things that I feel I've been fortunate in is that I started as a singles wrestler. My career was a singles wrestler. And then, the tag team thing kind of happened by chance. I don't want to say it was an accident, but with me and Matt Taven, we were always friends off screen. We were driving buddies. I helped train them. Like, we're best friends in real life. That's as real as it gets. So we were always together. But what ended up happening was I was an established singles guy in Ring of Honor, but they were trying to heat up Adam Cole at the time. So they really wanted some heaters around him. So they had me at the time and they had Matt Hardy at the time, who was at Ring of Honor, but Matt was jumping over to Impact. So they kind of wanted someone else to do a tag team around Cole. So Matt Taven was just floating around. And I remember Delirious came up to us. He's like, do you want to do this? And we looked at each other like, wait, wrestle with my best friend? Yes, of course I do. This is amazing. And I think because we were best friends, I think that's what made adapting to tag team wrestling so much easier than if it was just like, all right, you're going to go and you're going to go. Now figure out what your likes are, what your dislikes are. Now try to make it work somehow. Me and Taven already had the chemistry. So I think in the sense that like we were both established singles guys, then we were friends, and then we came together as a team. It was like, it was kind of a different dynamic that you don't see that often.
Yeah, no, and because I like you guys together, and then it's the same mentality. I just noticed especially the last couple NWA tapings, just the level of aggressiveness. And I think sometimes you can, when you see a guy's level of aggressiveness, like I would compare it to like a Dean Malenko, like you just, no nonsense. How much of that has it been for your personal life? Because you've been very, and one of the things I admire about you is there's no bullshit with you. You tell it like it is, and you made yourself the measuring stick. And when I hear you talk about your sobriety and things like that, how much, because a lot of times guys who had to have that little extra translated into being great performers. And then when they got off of whatever it is that they were on, whether it be drugs, women, alcohol, food, whatever, they weren't able to perform anymore. Was that ever, it's not a concern because obviously family first, but just if you could just talk a little, because your story, bro, every morning I get up, I check for a Bennett post, you know, I really do.
No, I appreciate that, man. Seriously.
And my addiction was food and women. So even though our paths were different, our footprints are different, it's the same path. So
yeah,
so if you could just talk a little bit about that, that'd be phenomenal.
Yeah, no. And I think like you said, it's the same path. And I'm a firm believer, and I hope I don't get a lot of heat for this, but I think everyone in their own sense is an addict. Some of us just have a better way of controlling.
Oh, that's a great analogy. And there's no heat on this show because none of us are.
I know the feeling. But no, it's, I think we all suffer from some sort of an addiction. It's just other people have a better control of it. Other people have life instances that make that addiction spiral out of control. Some it's, everyone's different, but I'm a firm believer that we all have our vices. And so I believe that it's the same path, whether it was pills for me, food for you, whatever it is, it's that same journey that we're all just trying to figure out how to mask what scares us the most, how to mask what is our biggest fear. It's all the same thing. We're all doing the same thing. But for me, the painkiller thing started more as like, I was in legit pain. I dislocated my kneecap. And then in the same kind of few months, I broke a rib. I was heading over to Japan where I really needed the money. So I couldn't take the time off. So I just went to the doctor. I did what was needed to do. And then that, just like you hear every single story, that just kind of spiraled out of control. One thing led to another, one thing led to another. And for me, the hardest part was the off time, because at that point, I wasn't working that much. We were doing a lot of the impact tapings, which, you know, Tyrus, you remember, was very much like 5 days on and then 2 months off or a month off or some weird
and
schedule.
And the paycheck varied. Yes, I remember.
And the paycheck showed up whenever you wanted it.
Yeah.
Well, no, whenever they wanted it.
Yes.
And they wanted it. Yeah. But the downtime is what killed me, because then I start getting into my own head. And as a performer and as an artist and as a wrestler, you start, everything gets in your head when you're not working, when you're not performing. Yep. And so in order to mask that insecurity, in order to mask that anxiety, I just took painkillers, because then I could just sit there on my couch, play video games and not have to worry about, oh, do I have to get up and get in shape for this? Or do I have to be ready for this? Or what's so-and-so doing? Or what's that person doing? I'm just in my happy place. So it was just this constant sitting around doing nothing that really led to the strongest point of my addiction. And when I finally got sober, when I finally got clean, I was able to discover, like you said, this strong style of wrestling, Noah, this in your face, pure wrestling, smash mouth wrestling. And I was able to incorporate it into my life. And what I really discovered was that with strong style, my theory is we have this idea in wrestling that strong style is, oh, just hit the guy and then no sell it. And I was like, when I really broke it down, I was like, that's not what strong style is.
No, it's not.
Yeah. Not even close.
No, it's about, you're going to hit me and I'm going to register it, but I'm going to fight through that pain and then I'm going to hit you harder.
Yes.
And then I'm going to take that and I'm going to fight through it and I'm going to register it, but then I'm going to hit you harder. And it's not about no selling pain. It's about fighting through the pain. Once I connected that to my life, I was like, oh, I can use strong style to help with my sobriety and vice versa. And I just kind of put the whole two. Boston Strong Style literally became how I live my life. It's about not quitting. It's about fighting through the pain. It's about embracing discomfort. It's about understanding that in order to have good times, you got to deal with the bad times. It was everything that I was dealing with in my life, I was able to incorporate in wrestling. And it worked out perfect for me. And like, truthfully, like Noah and old school Ring of Honor and watching old Nigel McGuinness matches, like those were the things I did in substitute of my addiction. So in a sense, it really did save my life too.
You know,
that's incredible.
You know, when I think about it, Trevor and A-Rod, you guys could probably add more to this. Mike, how tough was it? Because sometimes when you get clean, right, the people around you aren't ready for you to be clean. You know, because the enabler sometimes is just as dangerous as the addict, especially when the enabler is and the addict are connected, because the addict relies on the enabler. So the enabler gets certain levels of attention met. And now the addict is not doing that anymore. Was there, and you don't have to get into names and stuff, but did you find that where you had to cut people out of your life for your own sanity? Or were you surrounded by a bunch of people who were like, thank God?
You know, so it was kind of like 50-50 when the first person I told was my wife.
Smart.
And yes. And she, it was like one of those moments where, cause I had kept it a secret. She didn't know that I was and so it was just like, you're going to have to come out with this secret and tell her that your secret is that you're severely addicted to these painkillers. And
which is a feat in its own, because your wife's in the business and has seen some of that. So you had to really, like, you had to really go on some detective to hide that from her.
Oh, Trevor.
I think, too, it gets confusing, maybe, right? If a doctor is the one that's initially prescribing it to you, right? Like, this is supposed to help you. this is supposed to work, and it does work, and a doctor's given it to you, but then there's another side where it needs to be controlled, right? I mean, I know that.
Yeah, it's 100%, and it's one of those things where, as an addict, you actually do trick yourself into believing that, oh, well, a doctor's giving it to me,
right,
so how
right.
bad could it be? Exactly. Or you say right. to yourself, oh, I just saw so-and-so, I saw a crackhead on the street homeless. I'm not that, so it's clearly not bad. Right. You know, you're constantly justifying it to yourself. Or you got to get to the next match.
I got to get through the next match.
Yeah,
I got to get through the next one.
I used to watch 600 Pound Life and be like, oh, those fat. Like, I used to watch that. No, I used to watch that and be like, that's not me. You know what I'm saying? So right. I don't know what I'm worried about. You know what I'm saying? Pass the pizza. So that is. Sorry. You have to laugh at your tragedy. But I'm not proud of that, that I would literally be, if 600, my 600 pound life wasn't on that week, I'd be pissed. I'd be like, find it. I need to feel better. Like, I'd watch it with my shirt off. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, you know, like, I wanted to surround myself. I wanted to get rid of the Funkadactyls and get 2 600-pound just because I would feel so skinny. You know what I'm saying? Like, I would eat a Snickers bar and look at them both going like, you guys can't have this. If you want to get where I'm at, bro, you're going to have to work hard. It ain't easy being 410. You guys are 600. Like, get it together. So I completely, we laugh at it now, but like that was a real thing. Like I would watch fatter people object and judgmentally, like judge them,
right.
You know?
Yeah, you justify yourself. You justify it in that sense.
And that's insanity.
It is.
Yeah. You know?
Well, when you're in that bubble, I know just from a little bit of experience, when you're in that bubble and you're taking the gimmicks, you justify every single thing, like down to waking up in the morning and what you're going to do that morning when you know you should be, like you said, going to the gym or doing something to progress yourself.
And Mike, a question I have for you too is when you were in the midst of this, because like I, you know, and I'll admit this, I had a food addiction as well. And I still do.
Shut the up. You had a pill addiction. I never caught you shoving Big Macs behind your in the locker room. Like you didn't have a food addiction.
That's because I was really smooth about it. Every time we'd stop at a Pilot, I would go and I would get Reese's Pieces and peanut butter M&Ms.
Because you were high out of your mind on pills.
So I
mine was pancakes and orange juice.
Yours still is.
Well, but the point is, like, did you ask yourself, like, or tell yourself rather, like, you know what, like, as you were taking, you know, your pills and like for everyone, like as you were eating that candy bar or whatever, was it like, I'm going to stop this tomorrow. I need to stop this, but I'll just do this one last time. Was it like that? Because like, especially with my food addiction, that was the biggest problem I had, where like, I will start tomorrow or I'll quit tomorrow, you know?
Yeah. And it was 100% that. And it's like, and that's like going back to what Tyrus was saying too, is we constantly justify it. So you say to yourself, all right, I'm going to quit tomorrow. I'm going to stop. Or you tell yourself, all right, I might have an addiction, or before it gets out of control, I'm going to stop myself. You're always making it less than what the actual problem is. And so, and then you justify it. So then the next day when you do take it, you have phantom pain and you go to yourself, oh, well, my knee really hurts. In order to get to the gym today, I got to take a few. And then what happens is the next day you wake up and you go, oh crap, I didn't quit yesterday. Then you get down on yourself, you beat yourself up. So then you take more because you don't want to deal with the insecurity and the anxiety in your own head. And it's just this constant vicious cycle. And that's why they always say, the first step is admitting, okay, this is a problem. And you have to just be solid in the fact that regardless of whether it's good on some days or really bad on other days, this is an issue and I have to take care of it.
Yes. And now would you say, Mike, like again, they say the term addictive personality. Would you say that you have an addictive personality, or was like, you know, chemically, like what you were taking, did that more kind of develop to a like physical dependency on it, you know, and more of a biological dependence? Because I admittedly have an addictive personality. Right. I'm like that with food. I'm like that with, I mean, just a number of things in my life that I have to constantly like remind myself to exercise the virtue of temperance. So I was just curious as to your personal struggle with it.
Yeah, so right out of the gate, when I first got clean and sober, I would have told you that I thought it was, I just had this addiction to the painkillers. It was the opioids. It was their dependence on the brain and everything like that. And it was chemical. And then as I got further and further into my sobriety and really broke it down, I realized, I have to be careful with everything. I have to watch my step with everything. Food, television, a certain type of music, certain pre-workout, an energy drink, any certain thing, I have to watch myself, because what I'll do is somehow my brain will connect it. And all of a sudden I'm like, I need this. I need this. I need this. And then it just becomes that addictive cycle. So early on in my recovery, I was very much like, I'm only addicted to painkillers. Later on, and right now in my life, it's like this constant balance of like, okay, this is who you are. And certain things may start to get out of control, but now you have the tools in your toolkit to catch them and not let them get to where they're going to cause you any sort of bad health.
Mike, have you had a CBD gummy bear?
I have never had a CBD gummy
bear. So they're wonderful. And I think they're a miracle substance. I've struggled with something called keratoconus my entire life, which is basically when I was 24 years old, I was diagnosed with this eye condition, which is basically when your corneas, instead of being a 24-year-old man with 24-year-old corneas, they start degrading, right? They get your eyes, really, your corneas start degrading. You can't see at night, and you have to wear these special contact lenses. So for the past like 16 years of my life, you can't wear glasses. If anybody out there has this, it's a very real thing, and they should, you know, please look into it, because it's really a bad eye condition. But I had a doctor in Hollywood, California, prescribe me CBD eye drops, and I started taking gummy bears and doing things like that, and it has 100% changed, you know, the way I've looked at pain in my body. It's taken inflammation away, and it 100% has helped my eyes. So I don't know. And that is a totally legal, I believe a miracle substance, for anybody that's in a contact sport.
Well, let me ask you this, because the downside is I think I identify a lot with Mike's, the way he discussed addiction, because I couldn't even do those bears, because I would find a way to be addicted to the bears.
Okay, so right.
So I would take it even when I didn't need it.
Right.
Because that's the addictive personality.
Right, right.
Now, I'm going to throw something at you, A-Rod, because now Mike talked about addictive personality, and it was originally for pain.
Right.
But when the pain's internal in terms of like, seriously, well, like a broken heart. I feel, I'm just going to say this, I feel your WWE firing broke your heart. I feel, let me just speak.
Yeah.
And you were in pain mentally, and it took us 3 years to get you back.
Well, I also.
How much of that, though, because that's when the addiction is coping.
Right. Well,
and I felt like, I'm not a doctor, but I felt like you used substances to cope with something that was difficult for you to deal with.
Well, the truth is, too, I couldn't see.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I'm not talking about that.
Yeah. I mean,
that was aside, but I'm talking about the other stuff.
The truth is, I was out in Los Angeles, California with a really, really bad eye disease.
Right.
And I went to an eye doctor, and he said, we can either cut the front of your eyes off and give you a complete corneal transplant.
Whoa.
That you're at that stage.
Somebody else's eyes?
Yes. Somebody else's eyes. And for the rest of your life, you're going to have to. We're going to suture these corneas onto you, and for the rest of your life, you're going to have to take steroid eye drops to make sure that your body does not reject these corneas. And then he said, or you can try CBD, which is you know, a product of cannabis or whatever, very legal. And I tried it, and in a place in my life where I was really blind, I was praying to God and Jesus Christ that, you know, this could help heal me. You know what I mean? And and then of course, right, we get into the, you know, how much is too much, right?
Yeah.
You know, and of course, but I was in a situation where I really was like at the end of my physical ability to see.
Right.
So I was just kind of praying to God that it worked. But I think you're right. I think one gummy bear certainly can't turn into 15.
No.
Right?
And that's the problem when you have an addictive personality.
Correct.
Is that even though something is supposed to be good for you.
Right.
Like, for example.
I figured the guy gives me, we started with, and the guy's name is Dr. Boxer Walkler, and I believe he's a genius, and I thank God every day that he didn't cut my eyeballs off out.
Did you at least get to pick the color?
Huh? I would have gone with brown, to be honest. I was tired of blue.
I would have one different.
Yeah.
One different, so, you know?
Yeah, but he said that, and then, you know, and Hollywood is a very, you know, it's a progressive place when it comes to cannabis. And now the world is learning a lot more about it, and I think that's beautiful. But, you know, that was my issue. I said, well, I'm really blind. I might as well take 25 gummy bears.
Right.
You know what I mean? And then it's like, well, no.
That's Kev, what I would have done.
Correct. And then it's like, well, Kev, you know, why don't you take 3 a day and take it over a course of, some years, and it should start regenerating. Pray to God, pray to Jesus, which I do every day. It will regenerate your vision. But like we talked about addictive personalities, I figured I wanted it faster, and 3 gummy bears, you know, easily turned into like 10 or whatever it is. You know what I mean? So yeah. Yeah.
And it's a cute gummy bear. So you think it's not, you know,
right. You don't think it's going to do much. Like, right? Yeah.
Hold it right there. We'll be back in a bit.
I've got a question for Mike. Like you know, you have that addictive personality, and obviously through sobriety, like you're constantly, that's something you're going to live with and deal with the rest of your life, correct? Like that's
definitely
when you start feeling like you're leaning back towards the direction of your addiction, like what do you do to course correct or to change that mindset for people that are out there listening?
So I have a handful of things, but for me, like I was saying earlier, when I was sitting around and I was doing nothing, I need to be busy. Whether it's working on the house or working out or doing something, I need to constantly be busy. And truthfully, like I've said this before, WWE didn't help me in my addiction. Like they didn't send me to rehab. They were very open. They were nice to talk to. Goldust was backstage. He helped me with a ton of stuff. Road Dogg helped me with a ton of stuff, but they never actually paid for my, like, so I just did my rehab on my own. But the one thing that I was thankful for was that I was constantly on the road and I was constantly busy.
Right.
So I was on the road like 4 days a week, and I was surrounded by guys like Rowan, and I was surrounded by guys like Connor, who legit, even though like alcohol wasn't my vice, we'd go out to eat and I'd have Connor look at me or Rowan look at me and be like, hey, are you cool with this? So I had guys that were genuinely concerned and like, hey, we'll work through you with this. For me, it was always the ability to stay busy. And now, truthfully, not to get into like hippie guru BS stuff.
Why not? A-Rod did.
Yeah. No, I'm big into meditation now. I used to think it didn't work.
Bro, meditation's big though, man. It's real.
My life.
Yeah.
You just made A-Rod's day. I'm sitting in studio. Yeah. His little face just lit up.
Yeah, but it is real. But it is. You know what I mean? I can second that. And God is too. You know what I mean? And God showed up in a major way in my life. And every day I wake up and I give in all my energy
to God. Just so you know, when you knock on my door, I'm not answering.
Well, right.
But I think, you know, I think to play into that, I think that's why when people become, when they get sober, a lot of people turn to religion, because I believe it's about finally believing in something that's bigger than you. And whether you turn to religion for that or you turn to something else, I've turned to just trying to help people. I think I went through my addiction to say, hey, I'm a small town kid that was lucky enough to achieve his dream and to continue to do it. But there's all these pitfalls along the way. And I think my goal now is to show people like anyone can screw up. Anyone can have this problem. The trick is to just keep pushing through and that there is light at the end of the tunnel. And I think once you find something bigger than yourself, whether it's your family or your purpose, you just need to be fulfilled. And I think at the end of the day, we become addicts because we're not truly fulfilled. And then when we get sober and we find sobriety, we find our fulfillment, whether it's religion or career or family or whatever it is.
That's a great point.
When you guys were, you know, we're talking about meditation and things like that. And then I kind of have my own theory, right? And if you look at the United States of America, how we are the most addicted country in the world, right? Are we going to agree on that? I mean, that's just that's
kind of I haven't lived anywhere else long enough to make an assumption, but for the point of this argument, I'll say yes. Yeah.
Well, now with that, like it's funny how, you know, both A-Rai and Mike have, you know, they mentioned meditation. Now, when meditation, that kind of like paints an image to, it's a different image to everyone. Some people, they think of like these, you know, like the yogi hippies. Some people think like, you know, the Bruce Lee kind of, but what it is, it's quieting the mind enough to kind of get in touch with yourself. And I think in the, pretty much the structure of our society in this country, we have become so just fast paced and it's just go, 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 go. And like, we never take that time, whether it's 5 to 10 minutes, just to kind of get in touch with ourselves. And it's just funny because how, you know, both of you who have overcome addiction are incorporating that, you know, and call it meditation, call it self-reflection, call it quieting the mind. It's just something that I think is very, very healthy for everybody, especially.
I think addiction or not, it's a mental health practice that is very real and very applicable to anybody or anything struggling with anything, if they're in a marriage or, you know, having trouble with their class, you know what I mean? Meditation is absolutely real. And you're right. We don't talk about it enough in this country. I think it's like in Eastern medicine, right? It's big, right? But we don't talk about it that much here, but it is very real and it does work.
Yes. So, and then with you, like, so I'm a practicing Roman Catholic.
Okay.
And in the Roman Catholic tradition, there is a practice called the centering prayer, which was developed or it was just rediscovered rather in a Trappist abbey called St. Joseph's Abbey in Spencer, Massachusetts, by Father Thomas Keating, who recently died. And it's pretty much a kind of like a how to in meditation.
It's essentially
the same thing that you find in Eastern religions, where it's quieting the mind and everything.
Right.
In the Roman Catholic tradition or in the Christian tradition.
Yeah.
And you don't really find that a lot. I just thought it was very pertinent. So anybody out there that's kind of questioning this.
Well, that's what prayer
open
is.
Open mind, open heart by Father Thomas Keating.
Yep.
Yes.
Okay. So let me ask you this. Does this count as meditation? One of the things that I do is I go in the mirror and I will call myself out and I will strip down, go in the mirror and be like, you fat mother. Do you need to eat that Snickers? Are you gonna out today? No, I will literally call myself out. I will have a conversation with the mirror like another person, and literally be like, "Yeah, I'm not negotiating with you today. Here's what we're going to do. We're gonna go work out. We're gonna have our one meal. We're gonna get our work done. When we get in our hotel room, there are no snacks. Don't bring it up." And like literally, I don't want to say I'm bullying myself because that's insanity, but I always go find the mirror because I'm wired the way I grew up. I don't believe in existential things. I'm selfish in the fact that when I do well, I want to thank me. And when I do bad, I want to blame me. So I don't ever give thanks to some entity or whatever. I have respect for other people's beliefs. I either say all thank goes to me, so therefore all blame goes to me. So therefore I don't have to worry about ever saying anything I up on was it was the devil or it was karma or it was this. No, it was George Murdoch who did that. So that's how I live my life. So I don't know if that's a meditation.
I think
it's a certain accountability for sure.
I think all good religions are there to get you to face yourself. You know what I mean? Okay. I think so. So I think they're one and the same. I do. You know, it all comes to.
I'm not always mean to myself. Like some days I'll be like, you know, lately, you know, when you're down, you know, 55 pounds and looking shredded, I'll be like, damn, bro. Like, hey, all right, you doing it? Don't. Up today, okay.
I think there's nothing wrong with being honest with yourself. Elevation through honesty, and that's in life.
I think that's holding yourself accountable, and I think it's for me. I do both. I hold myself accountable in the good times and in the bad times. But for me, meditation is kind of what Aaron was saying. I'm not putting my faith in any kind of higher power. What I learned, meditation was described to me perfectly. And it was when you're in a situation and you're reactive to a situation, there's always going to be a stimulus and then there's going to be a response to that stimulus. but there's always a moment in between the stimulus and the response. And what meditation has done for me has been given me the ability to stretch out that moment in between the stimulus and response to go, is this really how I want to react? Or how do I want to go about this situation? So something will happen. Someone cuts me off in traffic. Do I want to go tailgate them? Or do I want to take a step back and then deal with this at another time? And that's like literally quieting your mind, I believe, gives you more power in that moment to be like, how do I want to react to that situation? Which as an addict is incredibly helpful because you have a stimulus. And instead of being like, I don't want to deal with whatever emotion's going to follow, I'm just going to take these pills and be good. It now gives you that moment of peace to be like, all right, how do I want to approach this and go about it? And just quieting the mind for 20 minutes every morning has helped me with that time between the stimulus and the reaction that you have.
Phenomenal.
And it's kind of like driving a car, right? Like where yes. in life, right? Our conscious mind, we are either fixated on what am I doing now? So we're either in drive, and sometimes overdrive, we can either be dealing with past demons, which can be a root of addiction. So we're in reverse. And meditation is just kind of the neutral. It's kind of checking in with yourself. And when what Tyra said, I think that's an amazing practice to like look at yourself and hold yourself accountable. Yeah. But again, my perspective, that's not meditation. That's holding yourself accountable. Meditation would be after you do that, you're like, okay, why do I want the candy bar? Like, okay, what's causing me to want the candy bar in the first place? Because ultimately the goal would be to not even have the candy bar be a factor. To when you're having this conversation with yourself in the mirror, doesn't even come into play. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Because there's a fine line. I don't want to turn into like Buffalo Bill where I'm talking about I me. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm not going that route. You know what I'm saying?
The lotion.
You know, so, but yeah, because I would, you know what? And I think now that I think you know, I'm talking about it, you know, I meditate before a wrestling match. I never right. really, you know, one of the things I do and Aaron and Trevor, when you guys came to my stand-up show, you found me sitting quietly by myself downstairs. Like I just get away from everybody and just kind of clear my mind. And it's like a reset. And then once I go, then I go through all the butterflies and I go through in my mind the worst thing that could happen and what am I going to do about it? And you know, the guy blows the spot. Can I cover it? Like, you know, or whatever. I get a cramp in the middle of the ring or whatever the hell. I go through different scenarios. Then I realize no matter what there is, that there is a way to get out of it. And then I just go, I don't think at all. I just try to get quiet, which is, it's difficult in wrestling because you have guys around you who literally pantomime every thing they're going to do. So I have to like get away from everybody. Cause if I watch them, I will get agitated. You know what I'm saying? Like their nervous energy becomes my nervous energy. Right. So I tend to get away from that. But I do that a lot. And again, like I think what Mike eloquently put together is that it's not necessarily anyone else. It's just about it's a reset. And, you know, cause I'll even do a few breaths here and there, but like maybe
on the daily,
just need to take it. Maybe I need to educate myself and look into it. Cause I always thought it was something like Buddha did. You know what I'm saying? Which I wouldn't mind meditating him because he was a fat. So I would look skinny meditating next to him. So I probably wouldn't have been
opposed
to it.
There's an app called Headspace. Check it out. Yeah. Seriously, there's an app called Headspace. It would be perfect for you. And that's a cheap plug. I'm not a paid spokesperson, but honestly, dude, on a plane or something like that, Tyra, I think you'd love it. Have you heard of that, Mike?
Yes. Sleep on planes.
Yeah, I'm not, and I wouldn't say, like, I'm not big into trying to tell people how to live their lives. I try to tell people what works for me, but I like
that in itself is brilliant.
Yeah. Well, I have a life and everyone
there's
else
no arrogance there. And that's the biggest problem is somebody finds their key to their riddle and they think everyone needs to have the same key. So, I have a lot of respect for you for saying that.
Yeah. No, but man, nothing in life works that way because we're all brought up differently. We all come from different backgrounds. We all come from different cities and states and countries. And it's like how I can sit here and talk to you guys and think that we all come together through wrestling, but at the end of the day, we all have been brought up drastically different. So all I tell people is this has worked for me. And these are the steps that I've done to implement it. And I just meditating has changed my life. And I wouldn't say that if I didn't genuinely think it could help people, because Tyrus, I was the same way. I thought it was for hippies and Buddha people or monks. And I was like, how is this going to help me? And when I started to actively just practice it and try it and just give it a shot and be extremely uncomfortable, I went, holy cow, like this is genuinely helping me. This is actually giving me that peace that I was always like, how come I don't have this peace? And I found out how to get it.
But I think Tyrus is right, though. Meditation is kind of practiced in different ways our entire life. You know what I mean? I didn't know, but when I was in high school playing football, nervous as hell as a child, you know, taking 30 minutes to rehearse by myself, that's meditation. You know what I mean? And I think it does work. And I think it doesn't just need to work for sports or sports specific things. It's a practice that can be transferred and used in life, you know? And I think as we grow up and we get older, you know, it is very valuable. And it comes to the surface as something that's a very valuable tool. I agree with you.
And you know, what's cool, Mike, is that, you know, and I am going to tie this in because you, Tyrus, and myself, we are pretty much a couple of the only people in the world to have a shared experience in professional wrestling, which I'll get on later, but it was how we dealt with it. And I'm, of course, I'm talking about when we were ejected from ringside. yes, that's funny, but that's something where, like...
Well, now you got to tell the story. Like, you can't just say that.
Yeah, no, I will.
But not tell the story.
All right, so here's what happened. Tyrus was wrestling Kratos. I was on the outside, and then the referee legitimately, like, this wasn't fake. Like, this was completely real, went to me. He was a young kid. He just goes, get out. I go, what? He goes, no, you have to leave now. I go, what?
NWA.
NWA. He's like, no, Billy said you had to leave now. So I ended up, like, I was just ejected. Tyrus, like, Kratos pulled his hamstring. It was just chaos, right? But
the ref left. Forgetting the part where I said, get the hell out of here. And he thought I was talking to him. And he left. In the middle of the match, the referee went to the back and said, Tyrus, kick me out. And Kratos was down, and luckily he was in a corner because he's like, I think I pulled my growing. I couldn't even pin him because there was no ref. So I just started kicking him, and then I leaned over and I said, because it was people on the outside, everybody get in the ring, like just brawl. No, but everyone was too scared to get in the ring. Cowards. And so and Aaron left because he was told to kick out. And then all of a sudden, I could see someone go up to the ref and be like, you dumb mother. Not you, Aaron. And then he comes running back in and slides in the ring. I looked at him. I said, we good? And then I proceeded to drop an elbow and pin poor sweet Kratos, whose groin was ripped up into his stomach. And 1, 2, 3. And I was like, I just looked at him and I was like, you know, you're never going to work here again, right? You know, that's and we never did see him again. So, but
no,
he probably went home crying.
Yeah. But he should have.
But again, how we dealt with it, right? 10 years ago, I would have been completely incensed, right? Now I was like, what the hell in the beginning? And like, as were you, Mike, right? When that happened to you this last taping. But within 5 minutes, right, we were actually kind of laughing pretty hard about it, right?
Yeah.
Like finding like that it wasn't as big of a deal because we had that perspective, in my opinion, right? Like
Mike, didn't you and Myers had a match and it completely got changed like on the fly? Like you had like
almost the same situation.
Yeah.
We had a whole match planned around VSK, who was going to be ringside for Myers. And then ding, 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 we lock up. And as soon as we lock up, we notice that the ref is having a full-on conversation with VSK ringside, not paying attention to anything we're doing in the ring. And we're trying to work and still looking like, what is he doing? And then we just see him eject the ref from ringside. And we're like, no, what are you doing? Stop. Don't do that. And like, and so all of a sudden the ref comes over. He's like, Billy said he wanted him gone. And we're like, well, now we got to figure this out. So
while the camera's moving, mind you.
So we figured out, we finally took about, the match was about 8 minutes. I would say about 3 minutes of us going back and forth while calling the match we had already prepared. We were trying to figure out the finish. Finally, we got on the same page. Just as we get on the same page, the ref goes, "We're sending VSK back out, so he'll be here for the finish." And we both go, "No, don't send him out because we don't need him. It's going to look stupid." But here he comes creeping out to ringside. And we just went to our original plan and just got the pinfall that way. But apparently Billy just wanted him in the back. And so we just had to call it on the fly. But Aaron, like you said, I was pretty pissed off when I got to the back because it was one of those things where I was like, this didn't
need to happen. You should have been.
Yeah,
you should have been.
I believe I said to you, nobody knows but you and Myers. That's how I believe that's what I told you.
Yeah, and that made me that helped. And that actually it was one of those things where even now me and Myers will text each other and joke about it. Because Aaron, like you said, by the time I got back to the hotel, we were in stitches at the hotel restaurant talking about what happened and just going through about how ridiculous and crazy it was. I would have been totally different 10 years ago. But now I'm just like, all right, as a professional, I said my piece. I said why I was upset and then let it go. That's it.
Yeah. And it happened to me and Dolph at a pay-per-view. We had we had 6 minutes, right? And the finish was that he was going to go for his suplex. I'd counter, but throw him across the ring, headbutt, splash, right? So we're going at the thing, and apparently the audience of one enjoyed the match. And he said, "Give him 6 more minutes," which is an eternity. When you're at 5:54 and he hooks me for the suplex and the ref goes, "You guys got 6 more." And I remember he said, "Don't let me suplex you."
Right.
And I said, "Are you sure?" And we're laughing going, "What are we going to do?" And I said, "Suplex me." And he said, "I can't." So I remember getting him up, reversing it, shooting him across, except this time, when I went for the headbutt, he wasn't there. I ate shit, and then we went and we did our thing. But for 5 minutes, it was basically we just were two kids playing in the backyard to get to where we needed to go. And we got in the back, and all Dolph said to me was like, "Hey, don't let me suplex you, brother." And it's literally no matter where we are, no matter what's going on in life, it literally is. I will just write that in my book, in my acknowledgments to Dolph. I have Dolph. Don't suplex me, brother. Like, it's amazing of all the matches because you forget more matches than you can remember. And I'll always remember that moment. Not only the fact that I was so proud of myself because we literally called 6 minutes in a pay-per-view and nobody was the wiser. Yeah. And I remember that's what Tenzai had said to me. He was like, "Hey, no one knows but me." So I was kind of cool that I was able to come over to Bennett and say the same thing to him because I was watching the match because Myers does something. It's one of my favorite things that he does. Eddie Guerrero used to do it. He's the only guy who effectively uses a drop down. He's the only guy who will, because every time someone drops down, you always jump, run over him. He does it and you trip and fall.
Right.
And it's just, I love it. Yeah. It's such a little thing, but I love it because no one else does it. And it's such an easy thing. So when I was at this, because you kind of go through like a foggy haze.
Catch him right off the rope.
I see that go down, and I'm like, "Yep, oh, I'm caught. I'm in now." Yeah. And I'm watching the match, and the Mike came through, and I was like, "Man, I love that match." And he was like, "Are you kidding me?" I said, "Bruh, I look for shit. That's all I do is look for shit."
Right.
I couldn't find anything. It was a free zone match. Yeah. Only you guys know of all the turmoil. And that's just, and then I said, "That's why you're my favorite wrestler." So, we got the entire tribe of Fox News watching us now, which means
well, that's what we're supposed to do, right?
Yeah,
okay.
That's right.
We drew, a crowd.
Just checking. Yeah, right? That's what we do.
Well, for more podcasts like this, just like this, good luck. You can check us out at foxnewspodcast.com. Mike, please come back. Absolute pleasure having you on today. Hopefully EC3 is alive in Florida.
The storm's real.
I'm pretty sure he has Arnold Schwarzenegger commando paint on right now with his rifles with the door open going.
He said he had his shirt off.
He always has his shirt off. He's always had his shirt off. There'll be a snowstorm and his shirt will be off. So that's and that's wow. His name used to be Derek.
So now he's
EC3 now. Yep. He's Apocalypse now, if there ever was one. But all right. Well, hey, thank y'all so much, man. Mike, please come back again. For Aaron, sir. Trevor, A-Rod, myself. Nuff said. Listen ad-free with Fox News Podcast Plus subscription on Apple Podcasts. And Amazon Prime members can listen to this show ad-free on the Amazon Music app.
Kudlow on Fox Business is now on the go for podcast fans. Get key interviews with the biggest business newsmakers of the day. The Kudlow Podcast will be available on the go after the show every weekday at foxbusinesspodcasts.com or wherever you download your favorite podcasts.